Hi, buddy. Welcome to a very special edition of Sportsline, as we have an opportunity right now to do what we are honored to do every year, which is to talk to the best ever behind the wheel of a car, and that is our great friend Mario Andretti. We've talked about this so often over the years, winning Indy, winning Daytona, winning a world championship in Formula One, and right now, I like to call it the month of Mario at Indy leading up to the race on the 26th, and we have had this visit for so many years. I've said this so often. I met Mario when I was 9 years old. He put up with me then. I am now 62, and he's still nice enough once a year to put up with me. Let's bring up the true driving legend from Indy, our great friend Mario Andretti. Paisan, how you doing? Mario, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, actually barely for some reason, but I'll do my best.
It's probably the combination of the tele system, the mix minus, and then the hotel phone. So I'll make this as easy as possible. First of all, thanks once again for the time. I have lost track, my friend, how many years in a row we've been doing this. Do you have any notion at this point?
Well, I'm not very good at that sort of thing, keeping track of things, but it's been great. You know, it's been great year after year. This is our annual get-together, and I always welcome it. So here we are again, and it's a pretty big year for me because of all the things that are going on as well, besides, you know, the real things, you know, with Michael Steen and then Marco, you know, driving. The Speedway, the way we're celebrating the 50 years since my last win, up to now, with everything that's happening, I almost feel like I'm winning the race over again. So it's been phenomenal. The Speedway, they're just on me. I mean, we have a great display over at the garage. I mean, the museum. You know, with many, many different cars, you know, from throughout my career, and they're just a phenomenal job, and I'm humbled by it, and but I'm enjoying every minute of it.
Well, you know, we've talked, Mario, the last 3 years, this one and the prior two have been huge commemorations, because we went in 17, the anniversary of the 67 Daytona win. Then last year, the 40th anniversary of the Formula One Championship, and now back to a 50-year anniversary with Indy. And I want to get to all of this, and particularly get to what I thought was just a terrific documentary over the weekend on NBC. But first, as I always do, and I know this has been a very difficult time for the family. You and I, when we were talking last year at this time, you were talking about your sister, Anna Maria, your wife of 56 years. Of course, Deanne passed away in July. How is everybody doing family-wise right now, Mario?
Well, you know, it's a loss that really is. I mean, it's the biggest loss that I've had in my life. You know, you lose family members, you lose parents, and at least they you feel that they've had. You know, my parents have both lived a long life, and it's never easy, but it's more expected. And but Deanne wasn't supposed to go yet, and it was premature, and it's even tougher. You know, when you live with your partner for almost 57 years, you know, it's never going to be the same, and she'll never be replaced. We're trying. You know, the family is even closer together than ever. That's a beautiful thing that we have. I do have great support, you know, the kids. But she, you know, will be forever missed, no question about it. And that's the way it is. You got to say, well, that's life, you know. Of course, we can't control those things. But, you know, she's up there smiling with all the things that are going on. I wish that I could celebrate with her on a lot of the things that they're happening, especially this time, because she was part of it, you know, and she's the one that held it all together for me, and never ever made me feel guilty, you know, for being so selfish, because, you know, Tony, when, you know, when you're, you know, it was as ambitious as I was, you know, throughout my career, you know, I did spend a lot of time having picnics with the kids and so on and so forth. But, you know, she always, you know, just held that side of it together for me and kept me pretty serene about doing my job. And couldn't have done it without, you know, so that's what's happening right now. But, you know, that's why I miss her so much. And I'll tell you, as I say, I hope she can smile and mark with this, this year for the race.
No question. And you had mentioned to me many times in years gone by just what you mentioned for people that might be hearing this conversation for the first time or have not heard it in a while, because we've been doing it every year for either the first time, or I think we talked right after 1987. I think that's how long it's been. But you had told me that with the kids, particularly because of racing with you and Michael together on the same team for a while, and naturally with Marco, but with Michael and Jeff, you were able to make up some of that distance. And as you mentioned to me, that time you spent away, you were able to make up for lost time, but Deanna had always been the glue there the whole time when, like you said, there were times you would be, particularly with Formula One, on your way across the world to race. And I know how much sacrifice has to be done, and I'm sure she is smiling down on you, and I do appreciate you addressing it right now, because I know it's not an easy thing. Along those lines, I do want to ask you, because I thought the documentary, you and I have talked in the past, ESPN did a Sports Century, Fox did a piece on you. I thought this one, Mario, and Patty Reed had told me in advance, your publicist, that I would love this. I thought it was just absolutely outstanding, and I wanted to ask you about a couple of comments you made when you were up in Napa and you were talking about your dad, because my grandfather left Bisceglie, Italy, southern Italy, about 30 years prior to your family coming to the States. He came here by himself, Mario. On the one hand, there's a great deal of pressure on you. On the other, he didn't have other people that he had to make sure were okay. I was just so struck by your words about your father and the fact that he not only had to give up everything that you guys had because of the war, but he also had a responsibility to a growing family. You can't express, can you, fully, how much respect you have for somebody who can do that.
Well, you know, all along I said it, and it's the fact that throughout the life, almost every negative turned out to be a positive, quite honestly. And, you know, just like you said, even leaving our home and winding up in a refugee camp in our own country because, the territory where we lived, where I was born, was occupied after the war by a communist country like Yugoslavia. And, you know, everything looked pretty bleak. And, you know, even for my Aldo and myself, we were, you know, our dream of becoming a race driver started there. But, you know, Dad, you know, in so many ways always said, I'm looking after, I'm thinking about your future. And that's one of the reasons that he sort of agreed to apply for a visa to come to America. And quite honestly, everything happened because he made that decision, and certainly he didn't want to begin a new life here, you know, technically, you know, if I wasn't thinking of us kids, you know, we would have stayed there. But as time went on, as life went on, began to realize that, you know, what if a lot of things, all the things that happened to us career-wise and otherwise, not only me, you know, my sister and all the siblings, you know, we just had an opportunity here to really, really enjoy what would be the, I've said this many times, the American dream, because I'm a perfect example of that. And again, so I thanked him many times. I says, Dad, I mean, you did the right thing in so many ways for so many reasons. And so, again, I have, you know, obviously respected him for all the things, the potential sacrifices that he made, you know, thinking of us. And, again, I couldn't have had it any other way. But, because of that, I feel that we've been so blessed.
I was curious, Mario. We will get to present day, I promise. But
can you speak a little bit? Can you get a little bit louder or anything? So I'm having a real tough time hearing.
Yeah, you know, Mario, I'm talking as loud as I can. Like I said, I'm sure it's the phone system at the hotel as well. Is that a little better, or is it still Russ? Is there anything we can do to turn me up from the station end? Okay, Mario, can you hear me at all?
I'm trying. Maybe you should have. Yeah. Maybe they should call me on my cell. Maybe we should try to do that.
Okay, well, let's do that. I'll tell you what. Let's do this, Russ. Let's go ahead and take a break and come back. And I think, Mario, we'll have much better success on this cell. So we'll take a break, come back more with the great Mario Andretti after this on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN. Everybody, welcome back to 16 on this Monday. We will get back to all the Fresno State doings throughout the week. But right now, it's our great honor, and we have talked about this year after year, to talk to the legendary Mario Andretti, someone who's been a friend, and I'm honored to say that, for a long, long time. And we made a switch of phones here. And Mario, can you hear me a bit better now?
Oh, now you sound like Tony Addato, yes.
Yeah, thanks. That's not a good thing, Mario, but I appreciate it. Don't ask my wife what it's like to listen to me, because she will tell you it's true, unbridled torture. But she's hung around for 36 years, so something's going on. I don't know what it is. Hasn't gotten around to packing up yet, probably. Hey, I wanted to ask you one thing about your dad, okay, and that is this. When you were, and you brought this up about appreciating the serenity in Napa, and how, you know, if not for the rest of your life, it would have been hard to appreciate that serenity. But it also was so full circle, because it was, in large measure, what your dad gave up. Mario, I know he wasn't able to see this, but are those great star-filled quiet nights in Napa where the cool comes in? Any conversations looking at the heavens at your dad at all? Do you ever talk about it in that regard?
You bet. Like I said, that's the one thing that I regret, that I never got to see that. And he was quite ill, you know, when all of this came about for us in Napa. And I kept thinking always, okay, things are going to be better. I'm going to get him out there, because he would have been so proud. But that was his element, you know, and you're right. You know, when I'm there, I can't help but thinking, you know, what if, you know, I wish Dad was here with me to share this, and my mom, of course. But Dad is the one that worked it. And again, you know, he would be out there telling a winemaker, you know, giving him some tips here and there, you know, sure, because that was his life, you know. And as you say, I do spiritually share it with him.
One other thing. Look, I thought I knew every story about you over the years. Like I said, it's been, goodness knows, 1966, so I didn't want to do the math, okay? Like I said, I was asking you dumb questions when I was 9. I'm 62. I'm still asking you dumb questions, and you're nice enough to put up with me. But I was not aware that you and Aldo managed to get yourself drunk at age 4. I thought that was maybe.
Well, it's was true.
Any repercussion from that? Did mom or dad get blamed? Did you guys get blamed, or was it, how dare you not keep track of the kids? How did it work at that point?
No, I mean, we kept watching Dad. You know, they had this big, you know, barrels down in the cellar, you know, fermenting barrels. And then, of course, you know, there was a time when you start tasting the finished product, and my dad used to go down there. It was, you know, a spigot at the bottom of the barrels, and he would just go with the funnel, you know, hold a finger in the funnel, and just, you know, instead of having a glass. And for some reason, we thought that was kind of weird. So as kids, we were like four or 5 years old. And so we got curious. We thought, well, we'll do the same thing. And there was, you know, nobody went down the cellar, which was really deep down, you know, in the house.
Right.
And we tried it. And and we kept drinking. And before you know, you know, we were pretty well buzzed. So we fell asleep at the bottom of the steps. And
They were looking for 6 hours. They looked for us all over the place. They thought we went off the wall. God knows, you know, because nobody ever thought we'd be down in the cellar. And right. That was certainly not our playground. So they looked at us, everybody looking all over for us. And finally, somehow they went down there. There we were sleeping at the bottom of the steps. You know, nursing a bit of a hangover.
Sleeping it off for 4 or 5. That's pretty good. Hey, I also wanted to ask, that's just a wonderful story. I wanted to ask you, and I know any time that you go back, and for you, obviously, so many mixed emotions going back because of all the great things that have happened in America, but also what you guys left behind. When you looked at the refugee center, Mario, what were your emotions? Because I could see you looking around saying, you know what, this was probably a lot worse than I remember it being. Was it just the resiliency of a kid to be able to get through it? How did you view it when you came back to take a look at the cramped quarters you guys were in for a good amount of time?
Well, actually, you know, right now looking around in that, you know, the establishment there, they've done a lot of renovating, you know, since, of course, the time. And they do a lot of art shows and things in that area. That used to be like, the first started as a monastery, then it was a college. And, I mean, but this was like, you know, way back in the 1800s. And, so anyway, when we, they put us there, it was quite dilapidated. And again, it was, the room where we were, where I walked in, it's basically right now a storage room. And so nothing was planned, so the caretaker just opened it up for us, and no problem. You know, obviously they were trying to be very helpful, but it brought back, you know, all of the memories. Of course, you know, it always does. I mean, this is not the first time that we went back. You know, this time with the camera crews and whatever. But you know, the first time I went back there was in '66. Which is 11 years after we left. That's when I did the first race in Europe, which was the 24 Hours of Le Mans. And after that, every time that I would be racing in Europe, I'd definitely make a quick stop in Lucca and then sometime go to Montona and so forth. And I made sure that throughout the period that every single member of my family visited that. You know, they needed to know, you know, when we talk about it, they needed to know what we're talking, what we're saying, and experience it. So, you know, it's been something emotional, you know, at the same time. It's when I go there, as I said it before, it almost doesn't seem like that was part of my life at one point, you know. But it was. It was a very tumultuous period. As you can see, I was born when the war broke out, so. Until we left there, I knew nothing about war, you know, in the first 5 years of my life. And even though not understanding, you knew that there was not right when, you know, you see so much, you know, suffering and so many things that just when you see your parents that are crying or someone, you know, then you know things are not right, even if you're just a kid.
And then one final thing, and we'll look at present day, because I particularly want to get to Mario Andretti Drive, which I believe was just anointed 4 or 5 hours ago in downtown Indy. But when you went back to the original home in Montana, which, of course, now is part of Croatia and has been since the war ended, Mario, it looked like it was, as you mentioned, a very beautiful place at one time. The surrounding area still, we can see the greenery, etc. Is there any thought to somehow redoing that to back the way it was as part of an homage to you and your family, or is that not something that government would have looked at the way the Italian government might have right now?
Well, you know, there was a thought. Actually, that home where I was born is for sale. There was we were never compensated for it, but somehow it passed on, you know, several families, and the last family that owned this, you know, the principal passed, and there was siblings at it in court. And I thought about buying it, but it just doesn't make any sense, quite honestly, to where it is. And, you know, how would I have the time to even spend there? So I'll just continue visiting, and that's it, and go with that.
Right.
But again, you know, that will have to do.
No question. All right, now to today. I've called this, I told Patty, I called this the month of Mario, because you are being honored at Indy and really everywhere on the 50th anniversary of the win in 69. But you had said, because was it earlier today, Mario, that they put the sign up in downtown Indy, Mario Andretti Drive? And were you telling me, well, you're trying to determine what the speed limit ought to be? Is that where we're at right now?
Yeah. Yeah, we're still negotiating.
How about 85? How's that?
Yeah. And actually, I put up, well, they sort of put it up there. And I went up there on the bucket myself. You know, the guy said, can you go up? No. I said, I'm driving this myself. So I went up on the bucket, almost hit my head on it, you know. But I maneuvered the bucket, and then I tightened it up. So at least I did some of the work. And but it's just amazing, you know, what Indy is doing, you know, for me personally. And I cannot even believe it, you know. And the exhibit they have at the museum, as I said earlier, is just something that took so much time, so much, you know, pain to just, you know, doing properly and making sense, you know, throughout the career and all that. And so, again, so many people just devoted a lot of time. And I was in tears when I first saw it the other day, and that's gonna be on display until November, you know. So
right.
again, it's quite the tribute that I you know, didn't I ever expect to know. I mean, it's but it's so awesome. I just can't believe what's happening. It's I'm so grateful to everyone, and but it as I said, I feel that I'm winning the race over and over again.
How many cars are they featuring here? Isn't it around a dozen or so, Mario, throughout the exhibit?
Yeah, I think there are around 17 cars there.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's extraordinary.
And it goes through the generations. They even have the first sprint car that I ever drove, you know. Then there's there's another museum in Oregon, Portland. It's a Museum of Speed. There they have a display. Also, an exhibit, I should say, for the season, and I'm going to be visiting that, of course, when we get down for the race. And there, they even have the, my very first car, actually, which is, it's a mock-up. But and then they have also a replica of my '67 NASCAR winner and all that. So, and here at the museum in Indianapolis, they have. The NASCAR winner, they have the chassis, but they have a different body on it because Darrell Walter drove it after me. So between the two places, it's represented. And it's amazing how many cars they keep digging up, you know, from individuals that own them throughout the country. Many, you know, just approached the museum and offered to allow it to be there for so many months. And like I said, it's been an exercise of an unbelievable dimension, and they're doing all that, you know, for the career. I'm totally humbled, you know, with what has been done, the effort that they put into it.
Well, I talked to Steph Curry. I know he and his wife, Aisha, were part of the 2016 two-seater at Sonoma. And Mario, now look. I, the simple math, since you and I are both February guys, you are 17 years older than I, so I always know your age, because when I hit 62, it means a few weeks after that, you're going to hit 79, which you did in February, but you're still at it with the two-seater. Is there a time limit on this, or Michael told me just before his 40th birthday, I bet you, I was talking to Michael on air, and I said, Michael, you going to drive past 40? He said, no. I said, well, your dad. He goes, my dad, you're going to have to tear the steering wheel out of his hands. He will never stop driving. Is that the case?
Well, you know, I don't know how I'm going to feel next year or whatever, and I'm prudent about that part. And, you know, if I feel something that's not right or whatever, you know, physically, that's it. You know, I'll be the first one to say it. But, I'm trying to stay in shape. You know, I just I have a, you know, fairly not a rigorous situation going, you know, as far as, you know, you know, some of exercise and whatever, but I feel pretty good, and as long as you know, I feel that way, I'll keep going. But it could be another year, maybe two, I don't know.
And still, how fast are you going with people in that two-seater? How fast are you going right now, Mario, at Indy?
Well, at Indy, normally throughout the month I'll be doing, you know, I'm in the 190 range, but then the day after the race, the last 3 years I've been giving 33 rides, give three laps, and guarantee 200 miles an hour. So then I get it a little more powerful engine. You know, it's a lot more expensive, obviously, you know, to go to that speed. And because I go through 10 sets of tires and all that. But that's fun. I mean, that's pretty much the limit for that car, you know. And so, but everybody gets a pretty good experience. In fact, I took my daughter last year around. She's quite petite, and that makes a difference, obviously. And I averaged 207 miles an hour. And she couldn't believe the G-forces that we were pulling through the corners, you know, because she'd been with me, you know, when I was in the 185, 90 range. But that over 200 makes, you know, another big step. And I love doing it because, you know, they always give me a fast car, and that's the only way we'll have it, you know. And I was able to I do a lot of adjustments. Some of the other cars, you know, it is what it is. But I set it up and myself, and I get it, you know, driving pretty well. But that's a lot of satisfaction for me. And as you can imagine, Tony, too, I mean, I know this is going to have people where they experience something that they couldn't experience doing it themselves, right. You know. So I think they come away with a different perspective of what it's all about. And I think more than anything, I think come away with more respect for our drivers, too, you know, what they're going through. A lot of them say, oh, my God, we only do two laps, and they got to do 200 within 33 cars around them. You know what I mean? It puts things in perspective to them.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mentioned to you that one of our owners, John Oslin, he's told me he'll fly right to India or anywhere if he could get in that two-seater, and I told him I'll see what I could do in the future. But, look, you and I got to tell you this, because I want to talk about the race, and I do appreciate the time as always, and I could keep you on for 5-6 hours, which would not be fair to you, but I would love it. But 2003, you and I had the conversation, if you remember, coincidentally, the day after the flip. I had Michael on too, and he said, I can't put Dad in the car anymore. It costs too much money. He tears up the car. He only said that because you were okay. But, Mario, I cannot believe that was 16 years ago. Is that possible? I know the calendar says so, but didn't we just have that conversation the other day? 16 years since that day? Time goes too fast, doesn't it?
It is amazing. It is amazing how time flies. You know, it really is.
And you, by the way, you were flying too.
But it always seemed like it happened last week.
Yeah, like I said, time was flying in 2003. You were flying there for a period of time and luckily landed back on wheels. All right, one other thing before the race, and this may be, I don't want to bury the lead here journalistically, but I know the twins are getting older, and I have to ask you, one of the motivations to be Mario Mousedready on Disney. Was this a legacy for Michael's twins? Is that what this is?
Well, I don't know, but they asked me to join Mickey Mouse in one of the roadster races, and how could I refuse? You know, that the twin that Mia, you know, we have Mario and Mia, Miyazaki,
right.
And you know, she loves Minnie Mouse. So she just figured, well, I'll be with Mickey Mouse, and they they couldn't believe, you know, that. Well, anyway, they were actually understanding the voice a little bit, even though I was shrilling a little bit. But it's cute, you know, just one of those things.
Did you have fun doing it? I mean, it is different, isn't it, a little bit? I mean, look, you've been in a lot of stuff. I saw you on Fallon and the Today Show, and I remember all the appearances you guys made on Home Improvement, because I know Tim Allen's a big race guy, and, of course, you and Dave Letterman right. are still close friends. But was this something special, knowing that your grandkids would see it and hear it, Mario?
Yeah, of course it is. You know, like, you don't know what they're thinking, but, you know, so, oh, my goodness, you know, there he is. There's my... No, you know, and,
right.
And again, but it was fun doing because, you know, you have to use a lot of energy and just, you know, try to figure out, you know, how that character should be sounding and all that. So it was kind of cute.
There's no doubt. I thought it was terrific. It started on April 5th. You can check it out on the Disney Channel. All right. The race itself, look, 50 years since the win. You and I certainly talked in 2006 about how close Marco came, and you also made the point to me at that time that Indy is a fickle lady and you just never know. Now, Michael's had great success as a car owner. He had so many times he almost won it as a driver. You and I have lost track of the number of times you could have won this race. I keep asking you this. With Marco, who continues to finish well, I saw you lighting the candles for him. Is this the year that it happens, Mario?
Wouldn't that be amazing, you know, that, you know, with his delivery that he has, the Dayglow car. And
the Runner Hawk, right? The old redo?
Yeah, exactly. It's that's what a car looks like. It looks fantastic, by the way. And, you know, coinciding with 50th anniversary, you know, of, that his grandfather did. So would that be oh, gosh, I mean. You'll hear me scream right there in California, my friend.
Well, the entire group, I mean, Michael, is one of the reasons that great success is he's a terrific car owner, obviously. He also knows how to select talent. Mario, that is as talented a group as I've seen in a while. You have to be impressed top to bottom about the stable of drivers your son has put together at Andretti Autosport. I think any and all are capable of winning this thing.
Yeah, no question. Actually, I think there's a caveat there, too. You know, they're all Americans. You put in this year's Indy, he's got five American drivers there. And that's you know, that's good. I mean, it's there's nothing wrong with being an international race or all the internationals that we have here. But it's also nice to fly our own flag, too. So that's, like I said, a bit of a plus. And as you know, they are capable, no question. I mean, two of them already did it. And you can't tell me that Marco is not capable of winning this thing, you know. And I just hope that, you know, the team and everybody, they do their job in the pits. That's so important. I think that's what robbed them, you know, of a potential couple races. I know two that probably could have happened, you know, if they did their job in the pits. So, you know, those guys are all important. They all want it, you know, and I just hope that, again, if things go smoothly, he's got a shot at it, no question.
One of the guys you're mentioning is Rossi, won the 100th. And, Mario, you and I have had this conversation about F1 because we have not had an American front and center at F1, really, since Michael and you and I have talked over and over again in 93. He didn't get a fair chance. By the end of the year, he was doing very well, but he had everything stacked against him. It was just a wrong year. Everything, as you know, was timing. McLaren, it was a bad time. Now, as we move forward, we've talked about the possibility of Marco doing this. Is Rossi a guy, if you were to peg somebody who might be the guy ultimately to go and get this done in F1, is he a guy you would look at and say he fits all the criteria?
Yeah, I think Alessandro would, yes, because he's been there, he knows all the circuits and everything, and, you know, because he did the Formula 3, the Formula 2 and all that. And so, basically, but quite honestly, we discussed it. It was just amazing. We just discussed it the other day that, you know, why don't we have an American driver? Why? Because what we need there is a top, you know, one of the top drivers from here. But you'd have to land a ride with one of the top three teams. Otherwise, even with the Haas team, with all the respect, you have no chance in the world to win. You know, so unless you can go there and bring results, and you need a, you know, that Mercedes, Ferrari, or Red Bull right now give you a chance, and that's a long shot, if anything. I mean, it's they're not looking at our talent; they're not considering it over here, you know, over there. So,
right.
You know, it's really, really a tough situation, and I don't know when we're going to see another American World Champion. Quite honestly, you know, we'd love to see that because. You know, with the tracks, you know, the race that we have in Dakota, you know, in Austin, we have a great facility, world-class, and it'd be great to see one of our guys in there fighting for a win. But, you know, I just don't see it in the immediate future, that's for sure.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's nice to see the races back on ESPN on Sundays. It's more accessible. Look, I like what NBC is doing with IndyCar, but as far as the international audience, there's no doubt, Mario, to be on ESPN helps the awareness of everybody across this country, and I hope it does drive it forward. I would love to see an American get in the seat and win the thing. I mean, you and I talked about 40 years going by last year, and it'd be nice to see somebody there. Now, the last thing for you is the topic that comes up every time you and I talk, and that is speeds at Indy. We saw 2 years ago, as you're well aware, we came within an eyelash of going right back to Guerrero's time in 92 and the concerted effort to slow the cars down. And not last year, but year prior, we were right back at 232. Mario, for the first time, you and I are talking before practice has even started. It'll start tomorrow. Qualifying is going to be different this year, trying to do it all on Sunday. They're going to do this where they're going to lock in 10 through 30 on Saturday and then take the bottom three and the fast nine, which is nice as long as we don't get rain. But are we going to come near 232 again? Are we right back there again?
I think I predict 235.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
How fast is too fast, my friend? I mean, we've talked about it over and over again.
I think Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say, but you're knocking at it, you know, in that range, in a 230 range. I mean, it's something happens, you know, it's not going to be pretty, you know. So believe it or not, I mean, the increments, when you start going over 200, you know, the increments are really, really critical. And but they somehow, management would like to see, you know, the record broken again. And so they're going to be giving them some more boost just for qualifying. So I think you're going to see some incredible speeds again.
Well, I just hope it's safe. That's all. I say this to you every
year. Yeah, that's what we want.
Love to see Marco win, but more importantly, I want to see everybody leave safely. Mario, I appreciate it so much, my friend. As I let you go, I am curious of one thing. If you had it to do all over again, and have it turn out the same way, would you like to live it all again, or are you content with what you have lived right now? It's a difficult question, I know, to answer, because you have all the greatness, but all the heartache also. Would you like to do it all again, or are you a content man right now and how it has gone?
No, I have no regrets. I have no regrets whatsoever. I feel that I've been blessed just even to be able to retire on my own terms, you know, having gone through all the different decades, dangerous decades, and being able to dodge so many bullets. So, yeah, I am happy and satisfied with everything that's happened to me. Thankful, 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 believe me.
Always a great pleasure. I hope you have a wonderful and safe Indy, and I'm glad they're honoring you. I hope people visit the exhibit. And I hope to see you on September 22nd back at Laguna Seca, back at that racetrack for the first time in a while. And I hope we've got one of the Andretti Autosport guys, not only winning Indy, but on the precipice of a championship title in that last race, Mario. It's always great talking to you, my friend.
Thank you. See you next year.
You got it. I'll see you. All right, guys. Our great friend Mario Andretti. We'll take a break, come back with more on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN. Everybody, welcome back. 2:48 here until 3 o'clock. CG will take over, bring you to 6 o'clock. We'll talk to Paul tomorrow, as he was nice enough to move one day so that we could talk to Mario today. And then we're off on Wednesday, the Bulldog Hour, because the Giants have a day game, as Toronto was in, and then we'll get to Andrew and to Jackson and everybody toward the end of the week leading up to Fresno State baseball at UNLV. And Bulldogs now, I think people know, on the precipice of winning the conference regular season. They just need one to get that done over the weekend in Vegas, and then more importantly, it'll be off to Reno on Memorial Day weekend, and hopefully they'll be able to get that done. The one great thing about that tournament, and we've talked about it the last few years, it was all well and good to take all seven in, but it didn't approximate. First of all, it did two things. One, it made it difficult on your pitching, which didn't help you, whoever happened to win the Mountain West tournament. It didn't help you if you ended up having to go through the loser's bracket, et cetera. It actually hurt the conference to use up pitching and then have to turn around and get into a regional. The other thing is, by going to four teams, as we've talked over and over again, you approximate exactly what the regional is like. So for Fresno State, what you want to do is win the regular season championship, of course, next weekend, be the one seed when you go into Reno, and then you're playing in a four-teamer that is exactly how you're going to end up playing when you're in the NC2A, so if you get there. And so for the Bulldogs, the goal is real simple. You can't worry about RPI and all that kind of stuff right now and any possibility of an at-large or whatever, because it's out of your control. But what is within your control is getting it done next weekend, heading in a couple of weeks to Nevada, where you just played very, very well, obviously, a few weeks ago. Win that and get yourself back to the NC2As for the first time since 2012. And look, we have talked over and over again, both softball and baseball, the odd similarity that at the very zenith of the program, the bottom fell out as far as national prominence. With softball, year after year after year, they would go not only to the national championship, but they would be very close to winning it, and then they finally break through in 98, and then in 1999, they return to Oklahoma. They lose in three games, and they have not been back on the national stage since. They have been to some regionals, but they haven't even been to a super regional, which, by the way, was not in place the last time Fresno State ended up in Oklahoma City. So it has been a 20-year drought in regard to Fresno State softball being nationally prominent. And for the baseball program, that was a really good Bulldog team in 2011. We had the games on our air at that time. We hadn't taken the rest of the programs yet. That was a couple of years away. But we had baseball at that point, and Paul and I talked over and over again going into that regional down to UCLA that Fresno State appeared to have everything in place to make a great run. The bats went dead there. The pitching was outstanding. There were a lot of really major league quality guys that were throwing in that regional. The next year you win one game against Pepperdine, elimination game at Stanford, and then the Bulldogs have disappeared since 2012. This team appears, baseball-wise, to be structured to have a real chance, but you can't count on the gods of college baseball putting you in the tournament without winning your Mountain West tourney. So win the regular season in Vegas, get yourself ready for Reno, and hopefully this team can make some noise and get back on that national stage. Softball-wise, our good friend Bob in Madera had asked about this NISC, which is the National Invitational Softball Championship, that starts on Thursday in Reno. It's a double elimination format. Fresno State, Nevada, Loyola Marymount is there, UC Riverside. The winner advances to the championship round the next week in Fort Collins. Bob, you had asked me if this was just an alphabet soup tournament. Well, you know, it's not what we see in basketball where you've got a CIT and you've got a CBI and all of this stuff. And I don't know if Fresno State is having to pay to get in this tournament. It's certainly going to cost them to go to the tourney. There's no doubt about it. Well, they wanted to host, but they couldn't do that because they'd already committed Margie Wright Diamond to the Valley Championships. I don't know, Bob, and I'll try to find out for you whether this is something that the Bulldogs are paying to get in. I know this. The softball program continues to be a good program, but it hasn't been a great program lately. If it were still a great program, then it would be in Oklahoma. And by the way, you talk about home field advantage. The Sooners of Oklahoma are the number one seed. And so you've got a team now that is, they not only have they won the thing, but Oklahoma plays, their de facto home field is there in Oklahoma City. I mean, yeah, I know they're in Norman and all of that, but they play so much at Oklahoma City that if they go ahead through their regionals and all that stuff, they're going to end up basically playing the whole thing at home. And that's sort of a tough pill to swallow. It's happened before and it'll probably happen again. For Fresno State, I don't know how anybody who's a longtime softball fan feels about the Bulldogs being in the NIT version of softball, but I would say it's probably better than staying home, and I guess you're going to compete and go after it. But there's no doubt there are still good softball players here. This is still a good program. Linda Garza, local girl, is a very good coach. But for whatever the reason, and we've heard it over and over again, that it has to do with money and it has to do with the Power Five schools, with gender equity, etc., having money to burn and putting all of that into, or a lot of that, into their Olympic sports, that it's meant it's more attractive. It's been more attractive for California girls to go out there and coach and recruit, and we still know that if you recruit California, you got a great chance to win. So if Fresno State can win this kind of tournament, Bob, that's all well and good, but I'm not going to kid anybody and pretend that it's the same as being on that big stage playing in the NC2As and hopefully ending up in Oklahoma City. I'm sure the Linda Garza and everybody feel the same way, but they will go to Reno. I'll try to find out for you whether this is one of those pay-to-play sort of situations. I hope it's not, but you are going to be on the road no matter what, and if you win, you're going to be on the road the following week. We'll see how it plays out. As far as the baseball team goes, this has been a really strong finish, and hopefully this team is going to get itself back to regional competition. In 98, if you would have told me the softball program was going to have this happen, I would say there's no way in the world they're going to continue to be on that stage. The same with baseball after 2008. It just hasn't turned out that way. So all you can do right now is compete the best you can. Maybe we're going to see the baseball program make a great run right now, first things first for them. And for the softball program, Bob, anybody else following the team, take it for what it is. It is not playing for a national title of import, but you are playing in a tournament that if you win it, you can at least hang a banner somewhere and maybe build, and maybe it'll help your recruiting a little bit. I'm not going to say anything about it beyond that. I just would like to see both bat and ball sports back to where they were. It's an important time of year because once, for Fresno State, basketball ends, this is not a university that, like a lot of them, just pulls in the reins and says, well, we're waiting for football. Softball and baseball in this hotbed of those sports is a very important proposition, and it would be nice to see everybody back front and center. We'll see what happens. All right, CG is coming up. We'll talk to Paul tomorrow, and we hope everybody has a great week, and we look forward to Fresno State and UNLV over the weekend in Vegas. This is KFIG Fresno.